sending home in the yard. Memories sending home.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Lohmeyer, and y'all, Zoom bleach, still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. It has been, as of Sunday, I don't know why I'm looking at my watch while I said that. My watch is buzzing. As of Sunday, it will have been 1 year of the Wrecking Yard podcast, which is kind of crazy to me. I wasn't sure what this thing was going to look like when I started. I've talked about that before, but I just had no idea it would go on this daggum long. And it surprises me, to be honest with you. I started doing this thing and it felt right and it became more right. And I enjoy each new one I write even more. You know, I get into these periods where I'm having to really mine into these memories, and it's pretty crazy to me. Oh my God, will you stop? Thank you. It's a balmy 90 degrees out here. I got my little air conditioner blowing up my skirt, though, so I feel better. It's a balmy, balmy 90 degrees out here in the Wrecking Yard tonight. This is Saturday night. I've been working all day. I've been working on the book and working on videos and getting stuff ready for Colorado. We're leaving next week. And, you know, it's rare that I get to take my my family with me, but I get to take my family with me. And it's something we've had in the works for a while. And I'm looking forward to the adventure. Also, looking forward to getting out of the heat stroke that is Houston, Texas right now. Colorado has pretty decent weather about this time. Unless you're in West Colorado, and then it gets hot as shit. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I'm feeling pretty prepared for it. And I won't go into too much detail on the dog situation, but I believe the dog is gone. The people that own the dog come and try to make contact with us. And in the course of that conversation, they changed their story a number of times. At one point, they wanted to come over and do the work on my porch themselves, which I don't know these people. And to be honest, I don't like you. Your dog killed my freaking animals. I don't want you on my property. I don't want you here. I'm really trying to restrain my anger and be a good person right now. But two, then they changed the story. The dog wasn't really theirs. It just jumped in their fence and was there for a little while. And then they changed the story back to assuming responsibility. And the dog was a gift from somebody. They changed their story a lot in the course of a 20-minute conversation. I told them I just didn't really want to hear anymore until the dog was gone. And that animal control was trying to pick up the dog. And they surrendered the dog to animal control. And then we could have whatever conversation needs to come next about damage and crap like that. But the most important thing is get that animal out of here that's creating havoc, that we've now found created havoc for other people too. They just didn't know what to do about it. Sometimes it just takes one person getting mobilized. But that dog has broken somebody's yard, ate a whole coop full of chickens and destroyed a chicken coop and caught on video then. That dog has gotten on video attacking other things in another person's yard. So it's just, that's where we're at right now. I think the dog is gone. Animal control, they let us know yesterday they were calling animal control to come pick it up. And I wasn't here, so I didn't see the truck, but I have not seen hide nor hair of that dog. And I look for it every time I leave the house. And I went to the gym this morning and did some other stuff, had a really good workout. So that's where we're at in the quest for justice for Possum and the gang. And, you know, those wheels turn slow, and that's okay. I'm glad Animal Control is following through on what they said they would do and how they would be involved. And so that does give a little bit of, I don't want to call it satisfaction, because I'm still really bummed out about these cats. think maybe it's just something that's kind of gotten broken in me as I've gotten older. But I just buried a bunch of people, you know. Buried a bunch of people. I carried a bunch of bodies. Just, I don't know. I got real attached to that damn little cat, and I'm kind of struggling with that. With having to pick that little body up off the ground, go bury it. Just did something to me that just, it still ain't sitting right with me. I'm not crying in my Cheerios, you know. Thank God. But still don't sit right with me. And I know that'll pass. That's what my meme always said. This too will pass. And she's been right about most of it. Painful shit, all of it. This too will pass. I am excited to talk to you guys about one of my favorite vehicles ever built today. It is honest to God. It is just one of the very select group of vehicles in my mind that just make me smile every time I see them. And Volkswagen's a big part of that. Let's get into our sponsor copy, which we don't have any. So I'm going to promote myself today. Reason being is I don't have any sponsors right now. So here we go. Hey, y'all. Jerry Wayne Longmire, host of Wrecking Yard Podcast. If you got a business or a brand and you're looking to get it in front of real folks who actually listen, I want to help you do that. Wrecking Yard is one of the fastest growing shows out there. We average 8,000 to 10,000 downloads a week, 11% engagement rate, and we're syndicated on Cumulus Radio now. All podcast platforms and broadcast live in video on YouTube. The folks who tune in, they're loyal. They're sharp. And they love getting a glimpse of the real me and the stories from the East Texas, lessons from the wrecking yard, and the kind of honest self-reflection you don't hear much these days. When I talk about a product I believe in, people generally pay attention and at least ask questions about it, which is what you want when you've got a good product. And right now, we got a handful of sponsor spots open. Your name, your logo, even your hat or shirt, front and center on a podcast that's already been signed for a book deal and is being optioned for TV and film at the moment. If that sounds like your kind of ride, email jwlcomedy@gmail.com and let's grow together. I'm a firm believer in all ships rise. We do also still have sponsorship opportunities with the Diamond Gem Summer Tour, which kicks off next week there in Colorado. Something else I was on the fence about for a while, but I decided to start doing cameos. And so I have cameos available. I don't really like roast trucks on there. I kind of have like, because I've had people over the years, honest to God, I've had people and pages offer me some ridiculous amounts of money to bump their truck up in line, make sure it gets in a video, whatever you want to call it. And my favorite thing about the way I do it has always been that I let everybody submit me the truck as long as it's theirs. And then I work my way through the list the way I want to. I'm still working on part of the list from last year and part of the list from last year. Part of the list from this year. And I've got right now about 2,000 submissions that I'm going through and thumbing back and forth. And sometimes I go pick a whole bunch of trucks out that match a theme to me. Or sometimes I'll work from the front of the list and work from the back of the list and just pepper it up. But my favorite thing about it is that it's not about who has money. It has always just been everybody has a chance to get into it. And I just think that's, I don't know, there's not a lot of fairness in the world anymore, and that's a way I can make that little thing fair. Joe Blow in Trailer Park with not a dime to his name has just good a chance as Diamond Jim over here with the finest truck you ever seen in your life. I don't always pick the pretty ones. In fact, truth be known, I'm more prone to the love on the ugly ones. Those are my favorites. Those are my favorite ones to make videos about and make my little silly ass jokes about. So, but I'm doing a special right now. Well, y'all won't see this in time, but I've been doing a bunch of Father's Day greetings, and those have been a lot of fun because people send me messages and they tell me all about their dad and why they love him. And they also give me things to pick at him about. And it is just, they're roasty but sweet. And I have just truly enjoyed being invited into people's lives and also seeing what kind of folks are like into me. It's not, the demographics have been wild. So I'm really enjoying that. So if you want a personal greeting or something for a friend of yours or whatever, a birthday gift for a friend that's a fan or that loves truck astrology or whatever, I'm just having fun doing them. So you can find me on Cameo now. And as always, you can just go to my link tree and there's going to be a link to it now. So, and so many of you have already ordered them. I got, I think I've done 37 of them in the last 3 days. Something close. No, 27 of them in the last 3 days. So I'm very thankful for that. That is money my family needs right now. So it's helping us out with taking care of this dog situation, having a little bit of income to pursue that. And I'm just very thankful, very grateful. All right, that's enough for sponsorship. I could be talking about you next time. Just reach out. Oh, I'm excited about this vehicle today. I had fun writing. I don't always have fun writing the technical side. I'm sure sometimes you guys can tell. Because some cars are kind of boring. They're hard to, there's not a story behind them. But this vehicle, Volkswagen Type 2 buses, the story goes on and on. I could never encapsulate the entire story. I could do 20 episodes about the VW Type 2 bus. And we would just be scratching the surface of the story behind this vehicle and what it's meant to so many people and what it's done in its lifespan on this planet. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's been on every continent. And there's been more of them on every continent than any other vehicle or something along the way. I don't remember exactly. But I know it's been, I think it's been utilized on every continent. Which I feel for the poor sons of 50s. I had to deal with an air-cooled engine in the Arctic temperatures of Antarctica. That had to suck balls. But you know, some vehicles, they don't just drive. They wander. They carry memories, sandwiches wrapped in foil, sunburns, dogs in the passenger seat. Those are all the best vehicles. Those are the vehicles we remember the most. Some vehicles are just machines, but some vehicles fall into the companion category. And for a whole lot of folks, especially folks with a little nomad, a little wanderlust in their blood, the Volkswagen bus was never just a van. It was a rolling living room, church pew with carburetor, loaf of bread on wheels, filled with half-baked dreams and roadmaps marked in pencil. So let's talk about the VW Type 2. Better known to most of us as the bus or the combi. But this particular one, the Baywinder. Second generation of it rolled out in late 1967 and stuck around in one form or another all the way to 2013. That's not just a van, that's a whole lifetime. Now, the first thing you'll notice about the later models, the T2s, is that they lost the iconic split window of the earlier ones, which is, everybody knows, that's the best looking VW bus. That's the one that, thanks to Gabriel Iglesias, you can't touch for under 100 grand, but they're beautiful. The old splitties are, that's the iconic bus. And when they went away from that split windshield, folks mourned. They were sad. People didn't like it at first. It's like when your favorite place to eat remodels. It's still the same food, but something about it feels a little more modern, a little less charming. The T2 actually got nicknamed the bread loaf because, well, it looks like one. It's big, rounded, soft corners, like it's baked in the shape of a hug. It also, it grew a little, you know, it got a little bigger than the old one. And they added a little more power and a few modern touches, switched over to a 12-volt electrical system, which, by old VW standards, it was kind of like handing a caveman a flashlight. But you gotta understand, even with the more power, these things were slow, man. They weren't built to win races. They were built to carry surfboards and kids, and homemade guitars, and maybe some bad decisions. You can pass anybody in a bus, you know, you just waved at them as they zoomed by. Hoped you made it to the next overlook without the engine fainting from heat stroke. Now, they started off with the little 1600 cc engine. It's not a big motor, you know. I've picked one up before. I'm not the strongest guy in the world. About the size of about three watermelons. Not much more powerful, I reckon. Sat in the back, all air cooled, humming like a sewing machine. But the beauty of these engines was never their power. That was never the appeal to these little air-cooled engines. It was their simplicity. Anyone with a little gumption and a good VW manual or a Haynes manual even could keep on running with some pliers, a flashlight, and a little bit of crying. I seen guys put belts on them while they're running. Over time, the engineers, you know, they tried to beef it up, but by the early 70s, they started offering a few little options, get a little more power out of it. They come out with that pancake engine, flatter, wider, a little more robust. A Type 4 engine could go all the way up to a mighty 2 liters. Still not exactly a rocket ship, but it's enough to get you up a hill, you know, without having to apologize to everybody in the bus. With that bigger engine, there came some options. That's when they started to, you could get automatic transmission, you could get fuel injection. They had electronic ignition by the late 70s. That may not sound exciting now, 2025, but back then it was like the VW bus learned how to tie its own shoes. And of course, none of this came without quirks. Things were quirky. Suspension that aged like milk in the sun. Electrical gremlins that lived behind every fuse. You had to do your own valve adjustments, and you felt every bump in the road like it owed you money. But when you talk to somebody who really knows their VW, they'll tell you quirks weren't problems. It was just part of the personality of the thing. Mexico and Brazil, they kept building these things long after the rest of the world just moved on into the 90s, into the 2000s. Eventually, they had to put a water cool engine in it and make them run on ethanol and keep up with emissions laws. But they still looked the same. That big round nose, foxy grin, just personality. When they stopped building them in 2013, I remember this. It was a moment, man. They gave it a proper send off. They made 600 special edition vans, all painted silver, all sold as last edition. And to mark the occasion, Volkswagen in Brazil made this little short film called The Kombi's Last Wishes. And if you haven't seen that and you are a fan of VW buses, go watch, just look it up, The Kombi's Last Wishes. But if you're invested like I am, be ready to get a little emotional. And I think they made that film purely out of onions. It got me worked up. It's not a car commercial. It's a goodbye letter from one of the longest running production vehicles of all time. It's emotional, man. And I think it's because the base truth is, for a whole lot of people, including myself, the VW bus was never just a mode of transportation. Some of them people, it's where their kids took their first naps, where the dogs rode shotgun, where love was confessed, or broken, or found again somewhere outside of town. It's not just steel and rubber. They're like time machines, scrapbooks, maybe a therapist. So, encapsulates so many, a hotel room on the side of the Pacific Coast Highway. And I know without a doubt, just because of how many of them there was made all over the world, that some of y'all listening right now either had one or wished you did. And me, I make no qualms about it. I have a deep reverence for these things. Not just because the engineering, you know, which sure was clever in that weird German way, but because of the humanity of it. They weren't perfect. They weren't fast, but they meant something. They gave people permission to wander, slow down, take the back road and the long way. And I think even more so now, where we live in a world that is obsessed with faster, shinier, and newer, that those kind of slow, soulful, mechanical creatures are something worth remembering. So this is, you know, here's to the bread loaf. Baywin, Combi, Dream Band. She might have topped out at 60 downhill with a tailwind, but she carried generations of stories. And that's a pretty damn fine legacy for a funny little box on wheels. I think if you're ever lucky enough to find yourself behind the wheel of an old bus again, roll the windows down. Let it rattle. Let that little 1600 breathe. Let it, that thing's got soul. Today's story is about another Type 2 with soul. A bus whose interior was as familiar to me as my childhood bedroom. This is a story about the wrecking yard. It's not about Papa. I don't know the story behind how this bus ended up in the wrecking yard. But at some point, I claimed it as my spot. One of those times when I was one of the faithful denizens of that pine-canopied Camelot that gave me so much joy as a young fella. I think I was around 10 or 11 when I first discovered it, you know, in my exploration, in my little rusted kingdom on Sexton Road. We had lived in Houston for a couple of years at this point. And me and my sister, my younger sister Kimberly, she's 5 years younger than me, we'd go to Granny's just about as soon as school let out for the summer. We usually stayed with them, about a month or so before we had to, you know, go back to Houston and get ready for the impending school year. I hated school in Houston. It was so foreign from the school experience that I had become comfortable with my little school in Leverett Chapel. You know, they had just been one group of kids. The kids I started out, there was 12 or 13 of us in kindergarten. And then we went on to first grade together, but there was no classes that you had to go to during the day. It wasn't, there was no bell rang and you had to go, oh, I got to go to this class or whatever. You know, we'd go to PE and stuff and recess, but the rest of the time you were in that one classroom with those same kids you've been going to school with since you started. We got a new kid one year, a missionary's kid. And I think we had two missionary kids show up over in the course of time I went to school, that little place. But it was just those kids. Those kids were the ones I was in first grade with. And then the kids I had second grade with, and you just had one. I had kindergarten. I had Mrs. Glover for first grade. I had Mrs. Gwynn. Second grade, I had Ms. Mason. And third grade was Mrs. Dean. Mrs. Dean, I remember a great deal. Mrs. Dean's class is who I was in when we saw the Challenger explode on TV. That was it's just one of those things, you know, one of those things you remember. It's older people, it's JFK, and maybe some younger people. I mean, 9/11, of course, something we all remember. But it's just one of those things. It's one of those things you remember. And the teachers were all hyped up about it because it's a big deal that Krista McAuliffe was part of the crew. That was it. You just had one teacher for every grade. I don't know. A lot of people didn't go to a school that small, but that's where I started my school career. And that was familiar. It was comfortable to me. And when I got to Houston, all of a sudden I had to go to five different classes a day. A bell would ring and You went to art class for a little bit, then you went to history for a little bit, and then English class for a little bit. And there was bells telling you when to go and yelling at you that you were late all day long, even if you didn't know where you were. It was confusing. It was a shock to a fellow that had been raised in a much more simple environment. And I hated it. I was also not crying in my beer about it, but I was bullied incessantly, you know, a sound like this in a city that didn't reward sounding like this. I couldn't wait for school to let out so I could go back to what I thought of as home. I just wanted to be in a place that felt familiar to me more than I wanted anything else. I wanted to go home. I wanted to go back to East Texas. It was a shock, man. And it wasn't fitting in well. And also when I was up there them summers, I got to explore the wrecking yard in a way that I'd never gotten to explore before, mainly because I was too young and also because my mother, God rest her soul, was very overbearing and very protective and constantly terrified something was going to happen to me or somebody's going to get me. Whereas my granny and papa were very sort of relaxed, had a boys will be boys sort of attitude about it. And I was allowed to explore the wrecking yard freely when I was up there during the summer. My only two rules, it felt like, was or three rules, was that I had to come when granny hollered for me. And I better not shoot up any Papaw's good vehicles with my BB gun. And I couldn't stay out after dark. You know, it was pretty simple. I'm sure my granny preferred the days when I played out in the wrecking yard all day. This is less hassle. The days I stayed out in the creek and the wrecking yard and up at the cattle pond fishing, this is less hassle for her. She could just focus on my little sister. Who was five, a little bit of a handful. I've told you before, last week, great detail about the placement of where Papa Wiley's house was and the placement of the shop and the wrecking yard as opposed to Granny's house. But if you can remember, Granny's house was kind of down at the bottom of the hill, and behind it was Papa Wiley's house. And then if you were walking into the wrecking yard that way, you would go left to go to the shop or go to my mom and where my mom and daddy's house was. But if you went off to right, there was a big, long, giant ditch where they burnt trash in. And if you went just north of that ditch through the woods, and there was a whole mess of cars piled up right in there in that little wooded area. And I feel like there was a couple horse trailers there too. But then a little farther on through the woods, there was a hill. And this hill was a steep red dirt hill that had been washed out by gully washer after gully washer. So it had deep mud cuts in it where the road had washed out. Deep enough at 10-year-old me, I mean, deep as my knee, you know. Just many ravines all up and down it. And when you made it up to the top of that hill, there was a little old flat spot. And that flat spot's where I've told you guys about before. There was a big old giant wooden boat on a homemade trailer. There was a 1950 Studebaker pickup. That's where my mom's red Volkswagen was parked for a long time. There was a few more vehicles and cars up there. I remember there was something, I think it might have been a Javelin. I think it was a yellow AMC Javelin that was parked off in the woods there. A couple old pickup trucks, so old it's hard to tell what they was. But off to the right of that boat, there was a two-tone 1973 Volkswagen Type 2 bay window bus. And it was kind of perched on the edge of that flat spot looking out west. But, you know, right up, just dang near right up on top of that hill. And a giant sweet gum tree had started growing up underneath it at some point and had wedged the front of it up in the air like it was gonna try to do a Dukes of Hazzard stunt. In fact, that tree had kind of grown up through the right front bumper part of it, and it come up a little bit kind of in front of the passenger side of the windshield before it branched out some more. It was It was blue and white two-tone, with the majority of it being blue, but just, you know, that faded, kind of rusty, good patina, good perfect patina bus, perfect patina bus. Would have been absolutely ideal. Back of the engine compartment was all burnt up, and anybody knows Volkswagens, you know, they were prone to fires. Back of the engine compartment had definitely been all burnt up at some point. First time I found it, I was with my little childhood buddy, Nathan, who was smaller than me. I was a small kid, but he was smaller than me. He was a little redheaded boy. I think he's maybe a year younger than me. And he lived down the dirt road that went in front of Granny and Papa's house. He lived a little further on down that road. A little plot of land nestled up against Curly Taylor's pasture. And my papa had sold his dad, I believe. I think his name was Kenny. Nathan and I spent so much of our time in those summers just exploring, digging through old shit out there in the wrecking yard, digging through buildings, digging through cars, playing in the woods, running around with fake guns, shooting each other, running around with BB guns, shooting each other occasionally. Nathan shot my pop bottle one time. I had a pop bottle I was carrying, soda bottle. I don't remember what it had in it, but I was carrying it by the neck or by the bottle cap, maybe. Just kind of down by my side. Nathan goes, "Watch this." And he shot that thing so perfect that it separated right at the neck in a perfect, it just hit that glass just right. It separated in a perfect circle. And the bottom of my bottle of pop just dropped right on the ground. Boy, it was hot, but it was cool looking too. So we had phones record everything. It's pretty good we didn't record everything we done. Some days we'd take our bicycles, we'd ride up cattle pond and fish for mud cats and perch. And some days there's a big old creek at the bottom of the Two Hills. Cattle Creek, I don't know what else you'd call it. The big old creek that run through Curly Taylor's pasture both ways. Went for a long ways in both directions, and we spent an extraordinary amount of time pursuing that both ways, trying to map that creek out for ourselves, like we was Lewis and Clark or some kind of shit. And I think we had kind of decided that creek belonged to us. We were the only kids we ever seen down there playing in it. We'd catch turtles and get our shoes muddy and get hollered at and climb the old pipelines that go across the river or across the creek. And that's back before they put them big guards on pipelines so you couldn't walk across them. You know? A bunch of them was WKN wellheads out there in the woods. You know, out there, see where I grew up, there's just everywhere in the woods, there was pump jacks. You know, a lot of land out there was still oil lease land. And it wasn't nothing for us as kids to go up and down that creek and see, you know, five or six different pumps. We had a pump jack in our backyard, you know, up on a raised section of land in between our house and Mr. Davidson. We knew, you know, we've been told by the adults all the horror stories about high school kids trying to ride them at graduation and getting hurt and that kind of shit. So we need to stay away from them. But they also, a lot of them had these flat ponds behind them that was full of like this black tarry oil stuff. And we like throwing stuff in there to see it sink and never come up again. We didn't have cable, you know? We just love throwing shit in that old black pond to see stuff sink. Yeah, we had a good time. One of these days, we'd climb that hill. We knew we could see that wooden boat up there through the trees, and we kept talking about going up there and look at it. We'd go up there and get on that wooden boat. We was up there trying to get to that wooden boat, and it was all overgrown, and there's dewberry vines everywhere, and those things rip your legs up right through a pair of blue jeans. So you had to kind of walk around all the big patches of dewberry everywhere. It was no big deal to eat as much as you want while you're doing that. That's still about my favorite kind of berries, dewberries. I'd like to find me something to grow here in the backyard, because Rachel told me her grandma, her great-grandma, used to have a whole row of them growing back here on the fence, and there's enough sunlight for it. But I've been to a few nurseries around here. I can't find none, so I may have to go out in the country and find me some cuttings, try to grow some, get Rachel to help me. But that's the day I seen that Volkswagen bus. I was tickled to death. I was tickled to death. I already liked Volkswagens. My daddy, you know, it's a sense of pride when you're young. My daddy was a guy I knew how to work on. Worked on from everybody. And I had some sort of sense of pride, like I'd been doing the work. I was tickled to death. Mainly because we was looking for a place to have us a little fort. We had built one fort, corrugated tin, and Papa had taken that apart because he decided we were going to cut our heads off going in and out of it. And then we had had another little fort off in another part of an old horse trailer, but we kept seeing snakes there, and we were both terrified of snakes. And we kind of decided we was going to try to make it in that with that wooden boat, but I ain't gonna lie, that wooden boat was kind of scary, man. There were places where the wood was falling through and it shook a lot when you walked on it. And we were a little scared of that wooden boat. It also seemed like it might be haunted, you know. Seems like the kind of place ought to be haunted. And it smelled all mildewy inside. The boat seemed snaky. I was very much a kid that if I seen a snake, I didn't go back to that spot. That was not my type of thing. I remember this time when I was with my cousin, little Paul, one time. Aunt Linda and Uncle Paul lived out in Love's Chapel too, but they had a big old piece of land behind them, and it was still woods that hadn't been cleared yet for their horses. Little Paul was much older than me. His favorite game, he knew his mom and dad was clearing that land, go out there and jump on some of them old rotten small trees and pull them to the ground. He called it tree wrestling. Me and him was, I was just following along because I was enamored with him growing up. And he would jump on these trees and pull them down to show off. And I thought it was pretty cool. And I ran to catch up with him. I stepped right on a little old water moccasin snake. What popped up out of a tree and started hissing, all that kind of stuff, scared the life out of me. I started running and hollering, and I don't remember if little Paul killed it. I think maybe he did. I just don't remember. I think he might have had something, a shovel or something nearby he could get to and do something to it. I don't remember. I remember he protected me that day. He got me back out of the woods without getting no snake bite. When we found that bus, the sliding door on the side had been left open. Maybe since the whole time they'd been there. And back seats was missing, and floor was covered with just a thick carpeting of like Velcro gasket boxes and Velcro fan belt boxes. I can't remember the name of it. There was a company there in town that made fan belts. There was a bunch of them boxes. I think their logo was yellow and blue. And sweet gum balls, pine needles. We were excited. We were not to be denied our new fort. It was already built. All we had to do was clean it out. And I remember old Nathan and I, we made the trek back to Granny's house and down that hill and back through the woods. And Granny had this rake with a big old long metal handle. I think my papa welded it up for it. But she used that when she'd go out there and burn leaves. She'd use that to stoke that leaf fire, you know. And so we grab that big old rake and she had old, you know, run-of-the-mill straw burn on the back porch. We grabbed a hold of that. And my granny always kept my funny books, my comic books, in an old Pampers box. They were just in this cardboard carton. It was some kind of diapers. So we grabbed my box of funny books. And, of course, I raided her. She had, off her kitchen, she had a little pantry. That's where the washer and dryer was. And pantry always smelled like high-top cans and mothballs. But she always had, when I was there, a little box of little Debbie snack cakes or brownies or Star Crunch. we snagged us a couple of them. And then we got off in the ice box and got, she always has Shasta flavored cola, and we got us some Shasta grape sodas from the ice box. Wrapped them up in a napkin and aluminum foil, just like Granny and Meemaw done. That was just the way you did it back then. Didn't have no koozies yet, or at least we didn't. And then we toted a little, me and a little Nathan, we toted our fixings, our that box of funny books, and wrapped up Shasta soda and brownies or whatever it was. Like that daggum rake and that broom. And we towed it all the way back up that, through the woods, back up that hill, walking on the high parts of the mud washouts. And we did the best of our ability, use that big old rake to pull out all the stuff covering the floor. Just right there on the ground, and flushed it out, and kicked it up under the bus. And we took that broom and swept it out with all the skill that 2 10-year-olds might have possessed. I can assure you, it probably wasn't up to anybody else's standards. I remember me and him yanked on that sliding door back and forth until we got it to close and open. I mean, it was still a struggle, but we got it where it would close and open. Once we was done, we climbed up in the front seats and we looked through the windshield. We're on the hill down onto the woods. And you can see all the way out across Curly Taylor's pasture. You can see all the way to the creek that run through his pasture land. You can see all the way to the trees at the creek, and then the hill behind it going up to where the cattle pond was. Victorious. Maybe that's the feeling. Well, we ate our little Debbies and we drank those cold Shasta grape sodas. And start reading funny books. Read all about the struggles of Archie and his jalopy and his lady problems, the constant battle between the dark-haired raven that was Veronica or the bubbly blonde next door, Betty. I, of course, even at that young age, I deeply, deeply identified with Jughead and his love of hamburgers. Jughead might have been my favorite character in the whole series. I told you that bus, it faced west. And as the sun started to lower towards the end of the day and hit that hill, we got close to that cattle pond on top of that next hill, and I just remember everything turned almost copper. It's like different shades of copper. Shades you can never recreate with paint. Shades I don't think any camera can catch. And it lit up the creek, and the water in the creek looked shiny. And see the light dancing off of it. And it lit up that whole pasture land, looked golden. In a way that still very much invades my mind from time to time when I think back on it. I've seen a lot of the end of days in that bus. But the first day in that bus was a sight to behold. I don't think anybody could write a better buddy movie. Just two dirty, poor kids. Having the time of their lives, an old VW bus with all the necessary ingredients for a perfect summer day. Friendship, little Debbie, and great soda. What else you need, man? And some funny books. can't make friends like that. My God, what are you doing? I remember one time I was pretending to drive it. I looked over and I asked Nathan. I was like, where you want to go? Nathan got a little quiet on me. He said, anywhere my daddy ain't. But can we stop and pick up my mom, though? I didn't know enough to understand it at the time, you know. But his daddy used to hit him a lot. And I think maybe dad might have been hitting mom, too. I ain't sure. But he was real scared of his dad. I mean, I was scared of my dad, but not like that. And that sort of thing was a lot more common back then. You know? I mean, I wasn't old enough to be aware of what all was happening, but I knew Papa and Granny wouldn't let me sleep over at his house. I always wondered what happened to old Nathan. It was a few years later, I came up one summer, and his dad had moved or something, or I mean, his parents might have got a divorce or something. I never saw him again. I don't even know what his last name was. But he was my best bud those summers in the wrecking yard. I also spent a lot of time in that bus with this black cat that I had befriended, sort of half-ass adopted. At least one summer, that cat was around a bunch. Animals didn't last long in the wrecking yard. I think I might have told y'all a story about that cat eating my biggest fish I ever caught in that pond. I know I did. It was probably one of the Pawpaw chapters. I can't for life remember what that damn cat's name was right now, but sort of followed me around the wrecking yard. And if I got still somewhere for too long, it would get up against me for a little pet and an infection. I spent hours in that bus. Hours I can recollect, like reading science fiction and funny books. That was my favorite. I read the whole Isaac Asimov, one of his collections was called The Bicentennial Man and Other Stories. And I read every one of them stories sitting in that old Volkswagen bus, imagining what the future was going to bring. Some of them scaring me. I was a little young for the reading material. Read Ray Bradbury. And I remember other times I just sort of sat behind the wheel and I imagined I was driving that rig, you know? Across all them far off places I read about in my books, from Narnia to Africa. I don't even think a little blonde headed hillbilly in a beat up VW bus would be that out of place in Narnia, to be honest. I bet old, what was his name? Old Mr. Tumnus. I bet Mr. Tumnus would have taken a ride with it, especially if it outrun the White Witch. As is the nature of life, all things must come to an end, you know, especially the good things. One summer towards the end of my trips to the wrecking yard, one of the last summers I went there, I rushed up that hill one morning, find the bus gone, and a few other vehicles. Gone. And all that was left in place where that bus was a scarred up, twisted up sweet gum tree. Some drag marks. Tire tracks everywhere in the mud. I ran back down to Granny's, distraught. I only to have Granny tell me someone had backed a truck and a trailer up to the top of that hill some months back and stolen a few vehicles from the kingdom. They didn't know who'd done it. I don't know, you know, but I hope that thieving piece of shit spends the rest of his days walking barefoot on Legos. Oh, man. The way those bus values are, the likelihood that that bus is on its fourth lifespan by now is not bad. It was pretty straight. I hope it is. I hope it is out there somewhere. And I hope its current owners are loving it every bit as much as I did. I hope it's as magical a little fort on wheels as it was for me. I had this, when I was that age, I had this very foolish notion that the wrecking yard and all its treasures would be mine someday. But the foolish notions of children are seldom realized. I guess where we'll wrap that up for today. Let's do some testimonials. By God, I am prepared. Sort of prepared. Kind of stacking these. I got to record another wrecking yard tomorrow for y'all to enjoy while I'm in Colorado. But I mean, that one's going to be a fun one. It's all about my old neighbor Skip. And I'm going to enjoy that one. Let's see who we got here. At Shaky Smoker 1, I started watching this series day one. Got caught up in life, missed a bunch, but I saw that Apache and knew I couldn't miss. Now, you don't know me and vice versa, but I could swear you're watching my life on TV and this was meant just for me. Been sitting at a fork in the road called life, and that was just the lesson I needed. Buddy, man, I always appreciate when I can help somebody get to the next step. So that's been a fun benefit and bonus, this thing, and helps folks out some kind of way, or make them feel less alone. Y'all certainly made me feel less alone in the world. So that makes me happy to hear. There we go. Oh, our old buddy Jake, Jake Master, I can't remember. Jake of all trades, master of fun. There he is. Sorry about your Miss Margaret and her babies, brother. Great story about your papaw. It makes me miss mine. He's still around, but barely. He built Fords, and he had a couple. I can't say what that says. 55 or 57s. One stock. One built with all Mustang parts. Oh, I bet that was a fun machine. Wish he would have kept them. Be careful of Papaw's good memory now. Yeah. Papaw's can be special. Hope I get to be one day. I think I'm going to rock it. Let's see who we got here. WSHR 1032. Great episode as always, but whoa, the end hit me hard. I've been struggling for months to move on from losing an amazing relationship because of a moment of anger on my part. But hearing that at the end just struck a chord with me, and I think that might be another piece of the puzzle for my healing. You and the podcast have been a great help many times in the last several months. Thank you again, J.W. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. That's been the side effect of this thing that's been just kind of amazing. And sometimes I don't know what to think of. It's a little overwhelming, but I'm thankful that this thing has struck a chord with so many people that are facing maybe some of the challenges I did in the past, or maybe some of the challenges I'm facing now. Cannot believe this has been a year, man, of writing these things daggum nearly every week. I mean, I took a week off at Christmas. But it's been a year since we started this experiment together. I really figured I would have run out of stories by now, but the more I dig, the more I find, and the more stuff I forget that I hadn't told y'all. I still ain't figured out what made me a car guy. But I can promise you, my dad made me a Volkswagen guy. I promise you that. Hope that those of you with your father still alive, and those of you who are fathers, are having a good Father's Day. Sure, mine will be good. It always is. Kids always make me feel pretty loved. And it's always a nice day. In fact, my oldest kid, y'all can't see it from here, made me a button with my very own Pixar character on there. It's a blue 1972 Ford F-100. And instead of Ford on the hood, it says Diamond Jim. And it just tickles the hell out of me, and I'm going to wear it. And maybe two of them, and the other one I put on my backpack for when I travel. Taking my whole family on an adventure this week. It's our first we've done a couple trips back and forth to Midland, doing the family stuff. But this is like our first. We're also centering some stuff around the kids. And this is like our first big family road trip together. And we're going to go to Colorado. And Rachel's never been to Colorado. And the kids, I don't believe, have ever been out of town. Well, Junie's been to Tennessee. Oh, Noah's been to Tennessee, too. We went to Tennessee a couple times. But they were babies. This would be like, two extra people in the back seat with their own set of complaints and issues and needs. I couldn't rent a VW bus, but I did rent on Turo. I got a pretty good deal on a very roomy Volkswagen Atlas, which is looks a little bussy. It's just keeping it in the spirit of things. And we rented one before to use when Rachel's car was in the shop for a while, and she needed a vehicle while I was out of town, and we were real happy with it. Rachel liked driving it. Be honest, I sure like to be able to afford to buy one. I like them, to be honest with you. I really think that might be the next upgrade. Cars are so expensive. I don't know. I'd sure like to have one. But, yeah, man, we're going to take a road trip in a VW. We're going to pile up, set sail come Wednesday. I got shows in Fort Collins Thursday, and I got a show in Colorado Springs Friday, and then we're going to spend some time with some friends in Denver on Saturday, and then come Sunday, mosey our way back to our swamp here in Houston, and probably experience heat stroke and a great deal of shock in the process. Colorado's temps are pretty nice right now. This place, we'll primarily be staying in Colorado Springs the whole time we're there. My goal is keep my grumpiness intact. My travel grumpiness. And so one day, my kids look back on this trip with a great deal of fondness and not memories of Dad losing his shit or being in a bad mood the whole time. I'm much better at it than I used to be. I suspect we'll be fine. I am a much older, more patient man than my father was when they piled us up in a Cutlass Sierra. I had to go to the Grand Canyon one time. He was still a very young father at that time. And, so I like that. I got about 10 years on. I'm probably more than 10 years. I probably got about 15 years on him when he made that trip. So I think this would be. Man, I almost forgot. We got some more packages this week. So let's do that real quick. Actually, I'm going to save that other one for next week. Open it, because I think there's one more coming. But we got this at the
Megan P.O. box.
Sounds like Hot Wheels.
Back ass doors.
Y'all saw me cut towards my face there. Somebody had called me on it. Can't make no mistakes on that anyway.
Holy hell.
Let's see.
Please add this to the drivendreams.org collection. Sabra Mertens from Centertown, Missouri. Can't help but wonder if you're any relation to our buddy Donnie Mertens. He sent us so many cards. But we got us here
a big old box from Mattel. Put that over there for safekeeping. I promise you next week I'm going to get you a count of how many we have because I have lost count at this point. But it just tickles me every time to open them. Oh, dang. Yeah. Can you imagine being a kid and seeing something like this? But it's another one of them boxes. Just chock full. Cars for kids, man. Been listening this long. I'm sure you know I'm a big fan of the drivendreams.org charity, where we just go down. They have a year giving every year, a day of giving every year in October. And we go give these cars away to kids. This is cool. Shelby Cobra Daytona Coupe. That's one of my favorite cars in Forza. I have a killer S1900 tuned on my Cobra Shelby Daytona Coupe, and that thing is just a blast to drive and often pisses my cousin off when I use it because it's hard to beat. That thing just sticks to the road. Oh, that's slick. Batmobile. Man, some of these kind of old school. That's kind of cool. Oh, man. Yeah, Rod Squad. Hell yeah, that's cool. Alright. Anyways, in October, we are going to make quite a hefty donation. And I think we're going to break ours up between a couple of different folks. I'm going to reach out to my old buddy Poncho Claus. See if he wants to do some work together. I'm a big fan of him, he does a lot of good. Children in Houston. As always, thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for giving up PC Sunday to spend time with me. Once again, I put together this thing I was thinking about dads, and I worked on it a little bit throughout the week, and I'm just going. Just want to tell you, if you're a father. Really, any of you. If you made it this far, I'm rooting for you. Whether you're holding it together or you're just barely hanging on, you might be at a fork in your road. I just hope you know that somebody out here sees you and they recognize that. And with it being Father's Day, I want to speak a word to the dads out there. The good ones, the tired ones, the ones trying their very damn best. And even the ones learning how to try for the first time. Keep going. You matter more than you know. Your presence, your patience, your quiet effort, it builds a world that your kids will stand on someday. And even those of y'all who grew up with fathers who weren't gentle or kind or even around, for whatever reason, you're not doomed to carry that story forever. You get to write a new one. You get to be the man you need. And you ain't alone in that work. Part of you know, part of this little Wrecking Yard family now. Around here, we believe in redemption. Believe in doing the work. Learning how to love better. Even if you never saw it done right. So take care of yourself. And if nobody's told you lately, I'm proud of you. I'm JW, and I love you.